parallel, they'll paint it starting scratch. You just put something, you do shirts out there, you have a nice sort of strong branding, and then him and I ran into each other and started having a chat, and he's like, he's spawned the famous combo hat-free stuff. So anyway, it's going to be, I think, about 6 or 7 designs going to be coming out at the t-shirt store, and there's going to be 6 of them, as you can see. It's just going to try and incorporate some of our artwork and then the famous logo that are in there. So here's the, I think you've got one. Here's the, oh, that's a great version of it right there, in case you don't want the white one on there. So, any other? Oh, and I have company. Okay, that's the end of it. Okay, so let's just open this up a little bit of conversation and let people go here. I'll pass it down here. So we'll start with John and we'll work our way here. So John has jumped on board working on the Spawn with myself and Will and Tim. So maybe just talk to them a little bit about the shift that we went to from sort of 200 into issue 201. Fast forward, because if you read the last line, I'm going to say the last line that I put in that 6200 says we're going to go underground was really a big sort of beacon light as to the new direction we're going to go into. And so what it was that I wanted with that one word John to speak on it was I still want to do all the things that you guys are used to and fun, which is having them out in the fight and whatever. What I wanted to do was just scale down what they look like. So that everybody still wants the same things, but just going to start looking more and more normal instead of fantastic, so they can actually integrate into human society and start doing things by controlling the airwaves and maybe the advertising, and all of a sudden they run the big banks and stuff like that, and they control us in a different way instead of just zapping us and trade them. So you talked to them a little bit about the direction that we're heading with it.
Well, that last line, going underground, is pretty much the hallmark kind of the foundation for everything from 201 on. We're literally taking the Spawn universe and all those fantastic elements and made them real world. So there's things happening. There's still threats. There's still some fantastic threats within the pin in the book. I mean, you've seen some big fights and some units. But more of the threats and more of kind of the danger of the book is kind of people's actions and in the way heaven and hell are manipulating everyday human people and using them to kind of go about achieving their agendas and furthering kind of their goal of annihilating one another, and where this new Spawn Jim kind of plays into that whole game, how he's being manipulated and how he rolls with the punches. And we just finished 212 just came out, which is kind of the foundation of what the Jim Downey Spawn universe is going to be. And so you kind of get the big chunk and it's pretty much. So Will and I kind of go over basic plot points, and then I'll kind of flesh it out, and we'll bring it to Todd. Todd will give his thoughts, and kind of go back through and make some corrections, and we're kind of seeing it, and bring it to Todd. You get the real thing, and kind of the chilling, and he starts making it pretty funny, right?
So let me give you an example. So for instance, what if Rush Limbaugh was a demon, right? So,
what if? Yeah. Hypothetical.
So what if I was able to corner Rush, and I would say, Rush, why do you act like that? And what if his answer was, I don't believe in a single thing I say every day. I don't care. I'm not Republican. I'm not pro-this. The only reason I spew what I spew is because it antagonizes and it forces people to split and to bang against each other. And that's good for our agenda, to have humans always in strife against each other. That's why I do it, Rush. If I could say something else that would antagonize people, I'd say that. So I just do it because you guys fall for it as human beings. So that's sort of some of the stuff we're talking about and go forward with the Spawn. And part of it too is it's also going to lead you. If you guys like what we're doing somewhat in 201 up, it's closer to what eventually will appear in the movie as we get there, because that's going to be a straight art drama, no villains. None of that. It's just going to be a creepy boogeyman story, and it's just going to be all real but one item, which is the thing that we call Spawn. So that's sort of where we're headed in the story of Spawn. Now, we've got Simon, who, like I said, I found him, for any of you guys don't know the story, I found him on Twitter, right? I mean, it's cool as hell. I send out every now and then a thing on Twitter, and I go, if you think you got what it takes, or I would send me a link. And if you get about 200 of them, you pop them, and they're like very forgettable, look like my mom. And they go, not very good. And then there's about 4 or 5 out of those 200 that you just go, wow, you know what? And you start digging deeper into the rest of them. Simmons' artwork, I looked at it, I thought he sent me pro pages. I thought he was working for something. And he gave me some Batman pages, and we said something he gave. So I sent him a tweet back going, hey, what issues did you do with Batman so I can look at the rest of your artwork? And he said, well, I didn't do Batman. I did just sample stuff. And I went, wow. At DC Comics, see those pages, the higher the Batman because it was that good. And it was the style that I was looking for. So we got back to him and said, I was going to run a gig on the spawn because I'm looking for somebody to come in. And it's the style that I was going to do. I'm going to be a bad version of it. Here's the kid that's doing a great version of it. And he came on. So I don't know, if you want to talk to him about how your artwork sort of plays into the stories and how you actually can do it.
I actually wanted to John to help me out with my English.
Oh, and he's very, but you know what? He got stop. Very good. Okay, so first off, wait, before we get started, how many of you can speak Polish? Okay. Come on! So that you can speak English and sing along with us, right?
No, that's right.
Yeah!
You know what I said? I asked John to help me out, but his hands are shaking like,
yeah. Oh, he's there.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I think I'm good on this.
Okay. So walk us through some of your art, something like what you're thinking about when you're doing your art.
What I'm thinking about?
Yeah. Like, I mean, again, you know, you're not doing muscle bound, you know.
You know what, I work a lot with the models,
yeah.
But with the females and the males. And actually, you know, so it's more like doing a movie. It's not like a comic book, typical comic book. I'm inspired by, you know, Alex Malik, Ashley Wood, Bill Sienkiewicz, David Mack, and all of those guys. David Mack,
yeah.
Okay. So, I want this movie-ish style on the song.
Yeah, I know. Well, the first time I talked to Shimon was really odd, and then we were talking about, you know, doing the book in a movie style. Here's how we do it. There's a couple of things that sort of give a little bit of time to it. There's no captions in the book. There's no thought processes in the book. And either you see it or they speak it, which is how a movie works, right? So I go, we want to play in the comic book to be that way. So we started talking about the movies we like, and he started listing off all these movies that I had probably in my top 20. And I'm going, wow, something he's an old dude like me, because these are old movies. Some of these are old movies. And then he tells me, like, Kurt Holden.
Now?
Yeah.
I'm 13.
It's early 20s, and I'm going, some of the movies we're talking about, he wasn't really even born, but somehow he was aware of the quality of those movies, so I go, his kids didn't get it because he kept the same mindset that I have. So, oh, and
so, you know, actually, John, he's actually still down great panels, silent panels, every time, like, and also the bandit was there on the high school, you know, so it was great. Visual, and then you can bring a lot of reality. Yeah.
The one thing that we're trying to do too, and a lot of writers, Bill is very good at it, but a lot of writers seem to forget. There's a tendency, if Bill can speak about it when we get them here, of almost like they have to put a balloon in every channel. There's sort of an odd thing at times. They feel like they have to fill every panel. And I like the writers that, besides their directing the show, they can understand pacing, and sometimes pacing and getting the mood across in storytelling, you just gotta shut your mouth and just let the reasonable sort of dialogue, you know, especially if you shut it down and you show three silent ones and then some big twist turn with something sort of impactful, it's way better than just, you know, pop, and then trying to impress me with another line there. I have a rule that if I write a line and it takes me more than 3 rewrites, then I'm better off just not even putting the line in. Because I'm forcing the line that's not natural enough to get into the book. So I walk away from it. So, all right, now we've got Mr. Joe Casey, favorite Joe Casey. Why don't you talk to them a little bit like John did about what it is your instincts are of going forward on the haunt and what your plans are.
First, I can't wait to see how he can do it.
But we looked at the first 18 issues. What
you know, Kirkland and Todd and Greg and Ryan did. It's like, here's 8 inches worth of toys that we can now really start pumping with. And that's what we did. And sort of the thing right out of the gate that we do that sort of is the line of demarcation between what they did and what we're doing is the character Daniel Kilgore, he's the priest and, you know, the story. And he's had this sort of, ever since he's become the Hans, you know, merging with his dead brother, he's had this infrastructure around him, which is this agency, this sort of CIA-like spies that sort of trained him and helped him out. And there's a headquarters that goes there. He's got a lot of his friends. And first issue, we take all that away and strip it down to just the one character and start from there. And not only that, the one thing I noticed when I reading the issues that Robert wrote about Kurt, which is the brother, the dead brother, who's the ghost, that he seemed like he was just a ghost in circumstance only. Otherwise, he just sort of hung out and acted like, hey, Dan, what's up, you know, and acted very normal. So what I figured is, well, here's a guy who has found himself dead, and yet he's interacting with the living and trying to be as normal as possible. That's got to back up on you psychologically after a while, because you're not normal. You're a ghost. You're fucking dead. And so the first thing I talked to Todd about, we talked the story, is that let's see this start to affect Kurt in a really obvious way. So our first issue, he's already starting to act pretty wacko. So not only has Daniel lost the infrastructure of the agency, but now even his own brother, they're not exactly simpatico, they're not vibing. Because his brother starts, Kurt starts acting in ways that you've read the first, you know, run of issues. It's almost going to seem like a different character, but as we talk about it, it makes a lot more sense that we start seeing the effects of being dead would have on a human mind. That it would not just be like, oh, here I am, and you just can't touch me. But
I think we let Joe, I remember you putting it, the way you put it was that they were all running on adrenaline the first 18 minutes.
Right.
That all of a sudden you wake up, you're sharing a body with your brother, you're back from the dead, and everything just sort of, the shit hits the fan, and everybody's gone. And now we're getting at the point where somebody's actually going, whoa, how is this even happening? How is this, we've been reacting and not really thinking about it. Joe's going to sort of pull back, as he was saying, and actually come in there and start to analyze the psychology of what all that means. Especially even, forget sharing the body with somebody else, it's his brother, right? I don't know if you guys have brothers.
Beyond that, we're going to have new adversaries, new supporting characters. We're going to feed in the agency stuff back into the story, sort of very slowly but surely, because I like all those characters. And so we're just going to be able to kind of reintroduce them into the comic in sort of really interesting ways. It's not going to be a ton of characters sort of suddenly, here we are back, agency's back. You'll see in Robert's last issue the clue as to what happens or why they do what they do in issue 19. It's not overt, but if you see the development, that kind of ends the characters up in a certain place, it kind of at least get a sense of why maybe in the very next issue they are all gone. The other thing we're doing is that first one of issues, I looked at the balance, there's sort of three elements to it. There's a superhero element, obviously, there's an espionage element, and there's a horror element. And I sort of felt like the first 18 leaned very heavily on the sort of espionage element. So we're kind of taking those ingredients and we're kind of doing a new mix. There's going to be a lot more horror than there has been in the past. The espionage stuff is going to kind of pull back a little bit. Sort of crazy superhero stuff will always be there because that's sort of the nature of the character and the visual of the character. But even that, we're going to start tweaking
When you see Nathan Bart, it's obvious that it's not going to be a standard superhero comic, a standard espionage comic, so it really lends itself more towards how bizarre and scary and just weird can we make
it. That came in one of our very first conversations. I want to go, Nathan, look at it. If you say to the average person the word haunt, and you go, just give me your first instinct, I don't think it's superhero. I don't think people take that word and they go superhero, espionage, or agency. I think that word has connotations of scary, creepy, something like that. And so, again, that was one of the things I was talking about. We have to play up this title character's name. First off, his fitness is not up there. His face looks like a skull, right? Anybody that's walking around with skull makeup?
I'm on the back somewhere.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. Dr. Holstead, we do have a haunt. Stand up, please. We can see you. Right? Okay, now that face at 2 o'clock in the morning in the shadows staring at you, it should be unsettling, and it shouldn't just be sort of a fun
thing. It's unsettling right now.
So, anyway, okay, now over to Nathan. So now that we've got this story and some of those parameters, and talk to us a little bit about how you think your art fits into those storylines.
Once we first started talking about it, the challenge was trying to bring the horror and the noir, the kind of dark shadow existence in and kind of new life and breath into the book. So my first initial approach was really just to go back to black. I'm a huge fan of Kinnis and Samora and a lot of influence in the Kinnis in that way. And especially with the brush and Joe's writing, after some of the other collaborations we've done, I've had a chance to really kind of let loose through the ink and see what happens, especially with Zodiac and a few of the other pages from other works. And then as soon as I saw the first issue when it first came out, I was really intrigued by the concept of the character and the possibilities that exist. So in terms of that, I was ready to let loose with a lot of ink, a lot of black, and really play up as much horror as possible. And in terms of Joe's writing and the pace of it all, it really gives me a chance to kind of explore those quiet moments, those dark alleys, and a lot of depth and exploration into the characters themselves. Well, I mean, the creature is real. I mean, it's this thing that is haunt. I mean, it's organic. I mean, there's things that we need to say. But I mean, there's things that have lived. And yet, we just have to look at this fact for a bit. But, it's,
So in terms of what possibilities could exist, I mean, it's almost mind-blowing. And, you know, I mean, Joe doesn't really fuck around, so...
Joe's good about, and that we've talked about it, about writing stories, which I think is important. Sometimes they don't do it. Writing stories to the artist. I mean, you said it, before I write any story, I'm not even supposedly a writer. But the first thing I do, I look at the artist and I go, don't do the kind of story you have to tell. And so I was already going to move into a response, into a more sort of urban look, but then as soon as the artwork came in that was super urban, then I go, it's perfect because you can draw. I have to tell you, the hardest artist to find for me, and I've been at this a long time, you have to sort of give me a little bit of value about it. So the hardest guy to find, isn't the guy who can do more things than an anime superhero, it's the guy who can lay down the street and down. That guy is, I mean, when I was in comic books, as Steve Cohen, he was pretty good at it. I remember the whole run of Super Dracula was pretty good. He did some cool stuff, but the guy who can put shadows on faces, and you know, it's just like one like black blockage, really, I mean, you start paying attention when you're looking at comic books, you're looking at artists. So many guys can actually do that. I think there's, in my 20 years, I've seen four or five guys that can really do it. Muscle, the styles are really good. So again, that was never something that sort of interested me for the overall. But going back to what we're talking about with the Simmons artwork, in Spawn, part of the thing besides we've got the whole what if, you know, Warren Buffett and Rush Limbaugh actually warn us, is the whole concept of here's a guy who comes in and now he's got some healing power, he's part of some healing power. If you actually pay attention to the book, it's made fun of it. There's a lot of stuff going on in the costume there's a lot of character stuff going on. But we're playing with the angle too of if you can sort of resurrect people, then and people start following you, you can start making sort of messiah because you got used to now and all the people who just haven't quit. Then to me that guy becomes the most dangerous guy in the planet. Because the bad guys you get rid of them or recruit them because you got powers. But then the establishment, I'm talking about the system, I'm saying every one of them is a to be afraid of that guy. Because if he's a true messiah, he doesn't look the part, he doesn't play the part, he doesn't act the part, then basically he only mounts too much. And they actually evolve, and everybody else's brand of religion goes away. And so there's way too much power and money for each one of those brands right now to let any of that power go away. So now we should expect it between the rock and the hard part. Eventually, even the so-called good guys are going to start to squeeze. Because they can't have this guy who's a rogue. You can't have another big team walk around who didn't really establish what our guy looks like. And so if this guy is going to somehow water down that thing, we might have to eliminate that guy. And so there's all of a sudden you don't want. Now all of a sudden you have to wash his back and his front every day in his life because he's got these physical powers. That's how you get stories drawn for 150 years. Going back and forth. I think you're
going to be pretty jumping at any time to elaborate on any of that. John,
do you
want
to add to
any of that? I mean, at this point in the story, that's kind of the key element of what we're dealing with now is the different factions around the world having to pay more attention to the women's offense. And in him having this understanding of his powers and those forward, how he's going to be able to deal with that personally, we're also trying to manipulate all these people in terms of and then how, I mean, the book Spawn has been in New York City and then Alley's for 200 issues. The book is going to go. All the news media, religion, companies, business, heaven, hell, they're all different entities, different enemies, and different armies that are going to have to be dealt with by getting people around him in order to come out the other side, either unscathed or bloody as hell, but then coming in for an hour and all the time.
So again, the heads up in all of this, really the takeaway from all of it, is that if standard superhero fare is all that you like, this book probably might not be your opposite. But look within the range of what you read, you like to have a variety of stuff, and you actually like to see sort of the superhero sort of genre sort of make and curve just a little bit, then I think you'll enjoy it. I found out for me, after about like 10,000, 20,000 superhero books, and I read one of them, I got older, I started
$10 million per episode, and they're somewhere close to what it is that I think I'm going to get. If I can get there,